Amagyana Chimidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Lam Gayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udinayet So we're doing chapter Canto 12, chapter 4, text number 30. Na hi sattasya nanatvam avidvan yadi manyate nanatvam chidrayo yadvat jyotisho vatayo iva na hi satyasya nanatvam na hi satyasya nanatvam avidvan yadi manyate avidvan yadi manyate nanatvam chidrayo yadvaj nanatvam chidrayo yadvaj jyotisor vatayor iva jyotisor vatayo iva na there is no
He, indeed,
satyasya, of the absolute truth, nanatvam, duality, avidvan, a person who is not in true knowledge, yadi, if, manyate, he thinks, nanatvam, the duality, Chidrayor of the two skies Yadvat just as Jyotiso of the two celestial lights Vatayo of the two winds Iva as translation. There is no material duality in the absolute truth. The duality perceived by an ignorant person is like the difference between the sky contained in an empty pot and the sky outside the pot, or the difference between the reflection of the sun in water and the sun itself in the sky, or the difference between the vital air within one living body and that within another living body. We'll read the next verse. Yata hiranyam bahuta samiyate nribhi kriyabhir yavaharavatmasu evam vochabhir bhagavan adokshajo vyakhyayate lokika vaidukai janai. Translation: according to their different purposes, men utilize gold in various ways, and gold is therefore perceived in various forms. In the same way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inaccessible to material senses, is described in various terms, both ordinary and Vedic, by different types of men. Purport. All those who are not pure devotees of the Supreme Lord are basically trying to exploit the Lord and His energies. According to their strategy of exploitation, they conceive of and describe the Absolute Truth in various ways. In Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the Absolute Truth presents Himself as He actually is for the benefit of sincere people who do not foolishly try to conceptually manipulate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next verse. Yatha ghano ka prabhavo prabhavo ka darshito yakarmasha bhutasya chachakshushastama evam tvaham brahma gunastadikshato brahmam shakasyatmana atma bandana. Translation: although a cloud is a product of the sun and is also made visible by the sun, it nevertheless creates darkness for the viewing eye, which is another partial expansion of the sun. Similarly, material false ego, a particular product of the Absolute Truth, made visible by the Absolute Truth, obstructs the individual soul. Another expansion of the Absolute Truth from realizing the Absolute Truth. Ghano yadarka prabhavo vidiryate chakshu swarupam ravim ikshate tada yadahyahankara upadi atmano jigyasya nasyati taryanushmaret. Translation: when the cloud originally produced from the sun is torn apart, the eye can see the actual form of the sun. Similarly, when the spirit soul destroys his material covering of false ego by inquiring into the transcendental science, he regains his original spiritual awareness. Purport: just as the sun can burn away the clouds that prevent one from seeing it, the Supreme Lord can remove the false ego that prevents one from seeing Him. There are some creatures, however, like owls, who are adverse to seeing the sun. In the same way, those who are not interested in spiritual knowledge will never receive the privilege of seeing God. Text number 30. Again, there is no material duality in the Absolute Truth. The duality perceived by an ignorant person is like the difference between the sky contained in an empty pot and the sky outside the pot, or the difference between the reflection of the sun in water and the sun itself in the sky, or the difference between the vital air within one living body and that within another living body. 31. According to their different purposes, men utilize gold in various ways, and gold is therefore perceived in various forms. In the same way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inaccessible to material senses, is described in various terms, both ordinary and Vedic, by different types of men. 32. Although a cloud is a product of the sun and is also made visible by the sun, it nevertheless creates darkness for the viewing eye, which is another partial expansion of the sun. Similarly, material false ego, a particular product of the Absolute Truth, made visible by the Absolute Truth, obstructs the individual soul, another partial expansion of the Absolute Truth, from realizing the Absolute Truth. Text 33, when the cloud originally produced from the sun is torn apart, the eye can see the actual form of the sun. Similarly, when the spirit soul destroys his material covering of false ego by inquiring into the transcendental science, he regains his original awareness. So these four verses that are being described here are telling us about the process of understanding the absolute truth, Krishna. And the first two verses, 30 and 31, tells us how, depending upon the conditioning of the conditioned soul, then they explain or they understand the absolute truth in different ways. And therefore, there are numerous theories and ideas about the absolute truth, about God, which are influenced by their conditioning, by their particular makeup of their false ego. As the purport says, those who are not pure devotees are trying to exploit the Lord and his energies. And according to their strategy of exploitation, they conceive of and describe the absolute truth in various ways. So what that means is, we all do it, whether we're devotees or non-devotees. We see things in a way that facilitates. We see things in a way that facilitates our exploitation of the material world. And therefore, we'll see, even within the realm of devotional service, there are different ideas also. You'll hear different devotees give different opinions about different things. And one reason, of course, one reason is simply because variety. Individual souls are different, and therefore they have various realizations or different realizations and so on. That's one aspect of it. And, of course, devotional service and Krishna consciousness is very broad, and in certain ways it allows for different realizations. But another reason why is because we have our certain conditioning. We have a certain makeup of our false ego. We have a certain model through which we like to exploit the material energy. And therefore we use the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to facilitate that. Consciously or subconsciously. We may not always do so consciously, but subconsciously our conditioning certainly does affect us, because we are conditioned souls. And this covering of the false ego is very subtle. It's, as we know, it's the most subtle element. And it's more or less, in some ways, you know, it's imperceptible. And we read when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he is describing the kripa, the bhakti lata, the kripa of devotion. And we're all familiar with the sequence, how, you know, the seed is planted by the spiritual master. Through the process of hearing and chanting, the plant, the seed fructifies, it begins to grow. Gradually it produces fruits and flowers. But in the process, as we have heard so many times, weeds also grow. Through the process of hearing and chanting, weeds also grow, along with the bhakti lata, along with the creeper of devotion. And it says that sometimes those weeds appear to be non-different from the creeper of devotional service itself. Means what we are doing as, sometimes, as devotional service looks very much like devotional service for all practical purposes. But again, due to the influence of our conditioning and due to the influence of the false ego, very well be a weed. It could very well be a weed. And it looks exactly like, it resembles exactly like the creeper. And therefore, how to distinguish is not always such a simple thing to do. So what that what that illustrates is, even in the process of performing devotional service or reading the philosophy, the conditioned soul will find ways and means to justify or to intellectually facilitate our particular material desires. And we all do it, more or less. We use the process of Krishna consciousness to fulfill our selfish desires. Although theoretically we know it's all supposed to be for Krishna, and we're meant to be free of all material. We know that, and of course we always cultivate that understanding. But due to our conditioning, we use the process of Krishna consciousness and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to justify all sorts of things. Consciously or subconsciously, we do that. And this is similar to what Sukadev Goswami is explaining here. He gives the example of gold. According to their different purposes, men utilize gold in different ways. And therefore, gold is perceived in different forms. And this is the nature of the conditioned soul. They manipulate or exploit Krishna's energies, the material energy, and even the spiritual energy. We all know that we exploit the material energy in different ways. But also we tend to exploit the spiritual energy. In what we try to, of course, we can't exploit the spiritual energy because it's spiritual. But we try to exploit, in one context, you know, the spiritual energy in a way, it can facilitate our particular method or desire to enjoy the material world. And we, you know, it's not uncommon to hear us practicing devotees to justify our various weaknesses or anarthas or something or other in the name of Krishna consciousness. People do it all the time. It's just a historical fact. And therefore we see there's so many deviations within the material world because of this desire for exploiting the Lord's energies. But even within the spiritual realm, there are also so many deviations. Why are there so many? You know, they're called upper sampradayas. Of course, we have the sampradayas, means the strict lines of gurus and disciples who keep the teachings and the practice as it is, pure. But why are there so many upper sampradayas? I mean, so many deviations from the proper path of devotional service. It is simply because of the influence of false ego that people justify or twist the philosophy in various ways to make themselves feel comfortable. And some people do it in very obvious, you know, deviating ways that are clear for everybody to see. But in their consciousness, they have, you know, they have every single philosophical reason to justify themselves from their perspective. That's why they do it. If they didn't have that reasoning, they probably would be doing something else. So some of these deviations or misrepresentations are very obvious, they're very black and white, and they're clear for any average, you know, devotee to be able to recognize. But sometimes they're also very subtle. And they're not very easy to recognize. And as Mahaprabhu says, the bhakti lata and the material desire in itself can look exactly alike. And then how will we be able to recognize such differences is really through association. And we have the classic pastime of Jada Bharat, or Bharat Maharaj. Through his spiritual practice, he had become very advanced. Very advanced. So much so that he was able to give up. He was king of the earth. He had wonderful wife, children, citizens, kingdom, so many things. It says in the Bhagavatam, he was as easily able to give up all of those things as going to the toilet. It's not, unless you have constipation, when we go to the toilet, it's not a problem for the waste of the body to empty themselves out. So he was as easily able to give up all of those things as easily as somebody going to the toilet. That's how detached he was through his spiritual cultivation, his practice of devotional service. And then we know the pastime, the incident, how he saw the deer drowning in the river, and he took her and protected. And of course, you know, obviously he was rationalizing, well, you know, this is also a part and parcel of Krishna and devotees, you know, I'm a devotee, I should feel compassionate for others and help others. This, more than likely, these were all of the things that were going through his mind. And that was all very true. But at some point it went beyond, you know, the basic care required. And as we know, when he died, he was thinking of this deer. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, why wasn't he able to tell that he was becoming excessively attached to the deer because he was alone? Even though he was so advanced, but because he was alone in the forest, he had no Vaishnava Sangha. And he was, you know, taking care of this deer, and his attachment was growing and growing and growing, but there was nobody to point it out. There was nobody to say, you're a bit off track there. There was nobody to do that. And as a result, he became excessively attached to the deer. And then when he died, he was in thoughts of the deer, and we know what happened. So how will we be able to discriminate properly, even within the path of devotional service, is through association, particularly more advanced association. Because what we do sometimes appears to be devotional service could very well be something completely different internally. Of course, externally it might appear to be the same. But internally we could just be cultivating a very deep anartha, a very deep material desire that would mislead us during our path of practice. And again, therefore, there are so many upper sampradayas. Every spiritual tradition has them. They, in order to justify a particular thought or a particular anartha, even, then, you know, people break off and form their own religious or spiritual tradition. And our followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have the same history as there. In order to justify a particular anartha, then people break off and create their own philosophy in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, even in our Hare Krishna movement in ISKCON, we have something similar. In different ways, people who, for various reasons, you know, become convinced about a particular philosophical concept, that because it doesn't match, you know, the mainstream, because it's not accepted by the assembly of devotees of ISKCON, then they break off and create their own sort of spiritual movement or spiritual practice, which in many ways resembles Prabhupada's standards, but in other subtle ways it does not. So in this way, people, as Sukadeva Goswami says, people perceive the absolute truth in different ways. And if we were to, in one sense, you know, study the various spiritual traditions of the world, then one can see, based upon their own concept of God, then they come up with a philosophy. For example, in Islam, as one example, they are not able to understand God as a person. They just, for them to conceptualize God the Supreme in any way is heresy. It's like, you know, it's the worst crime you could commit. And therefore they don't conceptualize him in any way. They don't describe him in any way. It's, you know, just Allah and a few other names like that. But there's no other conceptualized manner in which they describe God. And even in Christianity, you know, they have this concept that God is the loving Father, and like a loving Father, He gives everything for us to enjoy. Therefore, we should enjoy in the world. It's God's property. We're His children. He's created all of this for our enjoyment. I mean, I'm simplifying it. I realize that. It's not all like that, but that's part of it. And, you know, therefore they create this whole practice and religion and custom and ritual to reinforce their concept. And then, of course, impersonalists do the same thing. God cannot be a person. Why can He not be a person? Because if He's a person, then He must be a person like us. Because their concept of person is what we experience as persons, material persons, and we know what that's like. So in their mind, God or the Supreme shouldn't be like that. Therefore, He must be impersonal. So again, because of their own twist or their own conditioning, they create a philosophy to justify their stance. And atheists do the same thing. So much suffering in the world, God is supposed to be all kind. So if there's so much suffering, that either means God is not kind or there's no God. So I'll be an atheist. I won't believe in Him. And the same for an agnostic. Maybe He is, maybe He isn't, I don't know anyway, so okay. So in so many ways, people create philosophies to justify their view of the world and their view of life. And in similar ways, people create, or the Supreme is described in different ways, in various ways, based upon the particular kind of conditioning, or the particular kind of exploitation. And that really is the beauty, one of the beauties of the Supreme Absolute Truth, that there's something for everyone. And it's more or less acceptable. If somebody wants to perceive God to be a great power, they're not wrong. Because in one sense, God is everything. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in various chapters, we know, you know, Krishna says, I am the taste of water, I am the strength of the strong, among trees I am the banyan tree, among bodies of water I am the ocean. In so many ways, he is explaining ways in the material world in which he is represented and can be remembered. Because not everybody can meditate upon the transcendental form of Krishna. They just can't go that far, not at this point in time anyway. They can only perceive of the material world. So Arjuna asks, well, how can they meditate upon you? It's all very nice that you say we should meditate on your transcendental form. But what about those people who can't do that? What's in it for them? What are they? How are they going to progress? And then Krishna says, yes, of bodies of water I am the ocean, of immovable things I am the Himalayas, and so on. So many examples are there. And if the conditioned soul meditates upon the Supreme, even in that way, they're not wrong. Because at least there's some concept of the Supreme. At least that concept is there. And they might conceptualize that object as a tree, or a mountain, or the sun, or the moon, or the ocean, or whatever they do. But that in itself will help them go forward. That in itself will. And the same for people who worship the devas. You know, they sometimes, so often, they think that so-and-so is God. So of course, on the one hand, the Vedic literature describes that to be a sort of atheism. Everybody is God, you know, that sort of concept. But on the other hand, as Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, that he makes a person's faith strong. If they have a particular faith in a particular deity, then he makes that faith strong. Of course, they might be doing it incorrectly, which he also says. They worship me alone, but they do so incorrectly. So ultimately, everything is Krishna. Everything is a manifestation of his energy. And in any way, the conditioned soul may appreciate the Supreme through his energies, through various objects, then some slight benefit is there. And therefore, even in the Vedic literatures, there are so many paths of realization. Of course, there's Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, then the Astanga Yoga, and then, of course, our Bhakti Yoga. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. Why? Because so many varieties of people are there. So many methods of spiritual practice are given. Why? Because so many different varieties of conditioning is there. And what suits one person does not suit another person. And therefore, in the Vedic literature, the various great sages have given particular paths of practice that will help whoever, at whatever stage, to gradually promote themselves. And again, that's why there are so many religious faiths in the world, because people are different. They have different levels of realization. As Prabhupada, he gave the example of the abridged and unabridged dictionary. So both abridged and unabridged dictionary, they have more or less the same words. That the abridged gives very simple definitions. And the unabridged, you know, explains the definitions in much more detail. So in a similar sense, various religious faiths or philosophies, bona fide ones, not just any, you know, common mental speculation that people manufacture, but the, you know, that conventional authorized religious faiths, Prabhupada compared them to abridged dictionaries. Means basic concepts are there, basic ideas are there. God is great and we should love him and so on. But detail is not so much. Why? Because their conditioning or their false ego is not able to accept. And why all this variety in the material world? Ultimately, because even in the spiritual world there's so much variety. Even in the spiritual world, in this verse 31, again Sukadev Goswami gives the example of gold. That depending upon its utility, people see it in different ways. In the same way he says, based upon the different false egos or the different conditionings of the conditioned soul, then they perceive God or the Supreme in different ways. But even in the spiritual world, people perceive God in different ways. This is in one sense in a contaminated fashion due to false ego. People see God in different ways. But even when a devotee has no false ego, still they see Krishna in different ways. The gopis don't see Krishna the same way as Mother Yasoda, who doesn't see Krishna in the same way as the cowherd boys. And they don't see Krishna in the same way as, you know, the residents of Vaikuntha or Dwarka. So even in the spiritual world, there's so much unlimited variety of the manners in which the devotees, the pure devotees, see Krishna in his various avatars. I mean, why does the Lord have so many avatars? Because devotees perceive and want to worship him in different ways. That's one reason, of course, not the only reason. But in the spiritual world, there's endless variety. The Lord has endless, unlimited avatars, and they all have their particular moods and methods of leela. And so many endless varieties of devotees are also there. And they have their endless moods of service and desires to serve Krishna. It's endless, it's unlimited. And because of that variety is then reflected in the material world in so many perverse ways, covered by the false ego. Ultimately, really, that's why there is so much variety in this material world, because it's a reflection of all of the variety in the spiritual world. As Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita. And the only difference, of course, is that in this world it's all covered with this false ego. And what is this false ego? Is exploit the material world in one way or another, or to exploit the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as Sukadeva Goswami says, it's all a product of Krishna. The false ego is a product of Krishna. The individual soul is also an expansion of Krishna. The ability to see, that energy to be able to see, is also an expansion of everything. Everything that happens is Krishna's energy. Often it is said, all that we, the individual soul, can do is desire. And even that's dependent upon Krishna. Even our desiring to go left or right or to do this or that, even that desire, which is our nature, that desire is also dependent upon Krishna. Our independence, we are taught that each individual soul has this minute independence to choose Krishna or not to choose Krishna. But even that independence is also dependent upon Krishna. Everything is dependent upon Krishna. And what the influence of false ego means, it's not all dependent upon Krishna, it's also dependent, well, it is dependent upon me. And when we perform our devotional service, if we can realize in our practice of devotional service that everything is dependent upon, even our practice is dependent upon Krishna, our success is dependent upon Krishna. If we can realize that, then as it says in the purport and verse to text 33, which we also read, when the cloud, which is produced by the sun, the cloud is produced by the sun, but when the cloud is torn away, or when the cloud dissolves, then the individual can see the sun. So in the same way, the false ego is produced by Krishna. It's his energy. And he creates it to facilitate our desires. And when that false ego is dissolved, then we, the individual soul, can see Krishna. And how is this false ego removed? Only by Krishna alone. Only Krishna, because it's his energy. We have read the Bhagavad Gita verse in which Krishna says, this divine energy of mine, very difficult to overcome. And actually for the conditioned soul, for the individual soul, to overcome the material energy isn't possible. I mean, how big are we? 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. How big is the material energy? 1/4 of the world, of the Lord's energy. It's 1/4 of the Lord's energy. And we're 1/10,000th, there's not much of a comparison. We're 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. And then the Lord's material energy is 1/4 of his potency. So how are we, so small, going to overcome that material energy? And it's the Lord's divine energy, it's his divine energy also. And how do we overcome? By surrendering. And what does surrender mean? To be dependent. Surrendering is to be dependent. Fully dependent upon Krishna. So he alone, as it says in the purport, only he alone can remove this false ego. Otherwise it really is impossible. How long we've been here, for how many lifetimes? We can't count. So we can imagine that conditioning. Prabhupada once said, it's like washing coal. As much water as you put on the coal doesn't, become clean, the water becomes black. But what is a diamond? A diamond is simply another manifestation of coal. Under intense pressure over millions and however many trillions of years, then that black coal becomes a very beautiful diamond. So in a similar sense, by nature we are a diamond. Every soul is a servant, eternal servant of Krishna. We're all diamonds, actually. What we are now, our conditioning is not us. Although we think it's us, and that is our Maya. Sometimes lament, oh, I'm so fallen, I have so many material desires and art. But really, that's not us. We're talking about something that isn't us. When devotees, oh, it's so hard for me to love. But that's actually also not us. That is simply our false ego. By nature, we are servants of Krishna. By nature, we have love of Krishna. We're all diamonds. That is what we actually are. And all these other things that seem to be our illusory covering. That's our dream world. All these other things, I'm so fallen, I have so many material desires, my false ego is so big. These are all our dream worlds. It's not us. But we identify with it so much. And therefore, you know, we tend to get hung up so much. Not to say it's not there. It is there. It's covering our real spiritual self. And to remove it, only Krishna can remove it. That we have to convince him that we want it to be removed. We have to convince Krishna, I want this false ego to be removed. And how do we do that? Through our sincere, determined efforts. We are all familiar with the story from the Puranas that Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavad Gita of the sparrow. The sparrow had laid her eggs on the ocean, and as would be expected, the ocean tide came up and in the process of going back took the sparrow's eggs away. And the sparrow became so distraught that the ocean had taken her eggs, she made a solemn determination. I will empty the ocean until I obtain my eggs, my offspring. And she began with her little beak to, you know, go to the ocean and with one drop and then fly to the land and drop the water. And of course it's impossible. It's not possible. It's ridiculous, actually. But that was the determination of the sparrow. That was her determination. And news spread, and then it came to the attention of Garuda, who is the same family, well, the sparrow is in the same family of Garuda as a bird family, the Lord's personal associate, his eagle carrier. So he became very much impressed by this strong determination of the sparrow. And then he came to the place where this was all occurring and told the ocean, who, as we know, is represented or has a personal form, said, if you don't return her eggs, then I will empty you. And Garuda has this power because he's the eternal associate of the Lord, and of course he's Garuda. So he has this power to empty the ocean. And then, as we know, the ocean returns her eggs. So in a similar sense, for us to remove the false ego is like the sparrow trying to empty the ocean. It is impossible. But if we show our sincere effort and determined effort, then we can attract the attention of the Lord's eternal associates and we can attract Krishna's attention, and then it becomes so easy. There's another verse in the Bhagavatam, I don't remember it, in Sanskrit. It says something to the effect that the ocean, like the material world, is the ocean of birth and death, but someone who has taken shelter of Krishna, it becomes as much water as in the hoofprint of a calf. Anybody remember that verse? Sorry? English? The water contained in the hoofprint of a cat. And where is that? In the 10th canto. So that's the verse. In the material world is compared to the ocean of birth and death. But for one who has taken shelter of the Lord, then it becomes as much as the water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. So we have to somehow cultivate that feeling of dependence upon Krishna. And of course we have to show our sincere determination to remain and to continue practicing devotional service consciously, because the material world is by nature a troublesome place. So there's always going to be troubles and ups and downs and sideways. And being a devotee is also, as we probably have experienced, is also troublesome. You know, it's troublesome from within due to our own mind and senses. And then when we have to deal with other people's mind and senses, that's an additional trouble. And then we have to deal with, you know, the material world on top of that. So it's a challenging prospect to remain serving Krishna. If you were to come here 20 years ago, you know, the faces in the temple would be completely different. And it may be the same after 20 years. Who can say? So, but it illustrates that to remain consciously and actively engaged in devotional service is not such a simple thing. It is not such a simple thing. Of course, people tend to remain associated with Krishna consciousness. Anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness, who becomes a devotee and at some point engages in devotional service, they tend to remain connected in some way or another and do something. But quite often the intensity or the determination of their practice over time weakens for all sorts of different reasons. But if we want to convince Krishna that we want this false ego to be removed, if we want to convince him, then we really have to work very hard. We really have to work very hard, consistently. Not just for 1 or 2 or 3 years, but we have to consistently convince him that yes, I want to remove this false ego from within my heart. Like the sparrow. And then it can become very easy. And it does become very easy. It does become very easy. But only he alone, only Krishna alone can remove this false ego. Because we need to remember that, you know, when a devotee achieves Krishna prema, they have Krishna in their grasp. They control Krishna. Someone who has Krishna prema controls Krishna. So like you and I, we wouldn't fully give ourselves to someone unless we trusted them implicitly. And we tend to hold back. Why? Because we don't trust someone implicitly. But if we trusted someone implicitly, then we would fully give ourselves to someone. Because, why? Because of trust. So we need to gain Krishna's trust. The process of devotional service is about gaining Krishna's trust. Because when a devotee receives Krishna prema, they receive Krishna. And therefore he does not give himself very easily. He'll give so many other things. Even liberation and so many other things he will give. But he won't give himself very easily. Why? Because he needs to trust us. He needs to implicitly trust us. And that's what we are trying to do in our practice. We want to gain Krishna's trust. And that means we have to be willing to consistently, despite or in spite of, you know, all the ups and downs that life gives us, that we remain consciously engaged, actively and consciously engaged in the process of devotional service, and that we actively and consciously remain engaged in devotional service, not for our own comfort and well-being, but for the pleasure of Krishna. And in this way, as it says, then we will see, because to see Krishna is a privilege. It's not a demand, it's not a right. It's a privilege. And we have to convince Krishna that we want to see him, number one. Number two, and then we have to convince him that once seeing him, we won't use him for our own selfish, or Krishna doesn't want to be exploited. We don't want to be exploited. Who likes to be? Nobody likes to be taken advantage of. No ordinary person likes it. It's a very uncomfortable feeling when you know somebody is kind of taking advantage of you, even in a little way. It's very uncomfortable. So, and Krishna is a person, and he's going to feel the same way. He doesn't want to be taken advantage of, even in very subtle ways, even in very imperceptible ways. He doesn't want to be taken advantage of. He doesn't want to be exploited. And therefore, we shouldn't be using the path of Krishna consciousness for our own purposes, because that really is taking advantage. Of course, we might begin like that simply because we're conditioned, but we should not remain that way. We must become surrendered, fully surrendered, and not use Krishna consciousness for our own purposes or for our own peace or happiness or fulfillment or this and that. Any way that will come, Krishna will take care of that part. But upon this false ego being removed, again, which only Krishna can do, then we will be able to, as the verse says, Sukadeva Goswami says, regain our original spiritual awareness. That's what blocking. What the block is, our false ego. That's what's blocking. That's what's keeping us distant from ourself and from Krishna. And the process of devotional service is about removing that. And ultimately we need Krishna's mercy to do so. Only He can do it. But we illustrate, we have to convince Him that we really want to remove it. And then of course He will assist. It's not very difficult for Him to do so, but we have to convince Him. Parikshit Maharaj, he convinced. He sat there for 7 days and seven nights, no drinking, no eating, no sleeping. But Krishna was convinced. Sukadeva Goswami was convinced. And of course we need, again, like he was a devotee. It's not like he didn't know how to die. He was a devotee. His grandfathers were the Pandavas. Of course he knew how to die. But still, he, understanding the necessity of sadhu sangha, understanding the necessity of hearing from realized souls, he put himself in that position, association, and prayer and effort. Then we can also, as Parikshit Maharaj has, we can also achieve this perfection of devotional service. So any questions or comments? Well, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? He defines it himself, what the absolute truth is. Well, he says, I am the absolute truth, so that says everything. I mean, we all, more or less, we know what is the absolute truth from the Bhagavad Gita, and then in the Bhagavatam it elaborates even further, and then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita then even further. So there, as we have heard many times, there are different aspects of the absolute truth. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna reveals, and in the Bhagavatam, he revealed more, and then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, revealed more. I don't know if I could say much more than that. I mean, we could. Yes. Well, the absolute truth is the absolute person, the supreme personality of Godhead. That says it all. The supreme personality of Godhead, The Absolute Truth is the possessor of all opulences. We all know the Bhagavan, the one who possesses all opulences, and Prabhupada defines the opulences as, what are they? Six opulences of the Absolute Truth. Pronunciation. So we could start with that. If we were to define what is the Absolute Truth, use the term given, Bhagavan, and then elaborate upon that. As Prabhupada says, nobody can say they possess all riches. Nobody can say they possess all beauty. But Krishna says, I possess all beauty, all riches, all fame. You won't find many people saying that, claiming that. So that's certainly one way to elaborate upon the Absolute Truth. And then following on from that, we can then say, as the Bhagavatam says, the Absolute Truth is realized in different features. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, and depending upon the realization or level of advancement of the soul, then they perceive the Absolute Truth in different ways, either as Brahman, Paramatma, and then ultimately or finally Bhagavan. And the Absolute Truth must be a person. If it's not a person, then what is it? It's not complete. So in these ways, I mean, you know, defining the Absolute Truth could go on for a long time. But simply put, I think that's how we would start with the term Bhagavan, explain that in some detail, and then how, then say how the Absolute Truth has different features, and the three features we know, and how different souls or seekers, they realize these different features of the Absolute Truth based upon their level of understanding, or as Sukadev Goswami says here, based upon their conditionings, actually. And then finally make a convincing case that ultimately the Absolute Truth is a person. If you and I are persons and have emotions and relations, ships and so on, then certainly the Absolute Truth should be able to have them. If we say that the Absolute Truth cannot or does not, then clearly there's something incomplete in that definition of the Absolute Truth. I would go around that sort of area. Does that help? Yes.
I work with some commentary condition. Commentary, Lord is descending to material world to attract us. Because this is a prison house. We are here for reformation. So Lord ascending so that he is attracted by our past, we are attracted by his past time. And then we slowly and gradually by Varnasa system or whatever way, by seeking us pure devotee and wisdom, we can reach the main purpose. Now you said also that spiritual energy can never be manipulated. Spiritual energy. When we try, we can never, because we are all covered. There's so much ignorance, so much of conditioning. The three modes of material are so strong, so powerful. Because there is also Krishna energy. That's how we say that. Also, because when we want to be able to do something. Now, my question is, how Lord Shiva is able to remove the false anchor?
How is Lord Shiva able to remove the ahankar? Where does it say Lord Shiva removes the ahankar? Sorry?
It is written everywhere, all the shastras.
Oh, I haven't read it. I haven't read it, maybe. I haven't read it, though. Has anybody else read it?
Yeah.
No, you have. I'm asking if anybody else has read it. I haven't read, maybe, but I don't know. So I can't answer the question because I haven't read it. Yes?
Could you elaborate a little bit more about that even if you devotees of Krishna seek you in a different form?
Sorry? Pure devotees of Krishna?
Yeah.
In different ways. In different forms. And forms. Yes.
So how the so that means that's from the knowledge of form, because even beauty was in different forms. So how does
of course we understand Krishna is the original form of Godhead. In one sense that's simply for understanding. In the spiritual world, they're not, you know, nobody's thinking Krishna is the original form and then Narayan and then Varaha. They're not dividing the different forms of the personality of Godhead up in that way. In the material world, when we study the nature of the Absolute Truth, then these different categories are given, you know, expansions and expansions and this incarnation and that incarnation and so on. But in the spiritual world, that's not there. So, for every devotee, if a devotee is worshipping Lord Narayan, for example, the four-armed form, for them, Lord Narayan is simply their Lord. They're not thinking in any other way, he has this expansion and that expansion. Lord Narayan is their object of worship and meditation and devotion. And the same for the devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan or Dwarka, they're thinking the same. They're not thinking outside of that. In the material world then we have all these classifications. You know, there's this category and that category. That's simply for us to try to understand what's going on. But in the spiritual world that's not there. They don't have this, you know, classified system of understanding, you know, the Krishna. And the devotees of Krishna, they, if there was another form, then, I mean, we know there's the incident of the gopis, for example. They were looking for Krishna. He had disappeared somewhere, and they were roaming in the forest looking for them. Looking for him, sorry. And at some point, Krishna manifested himself as Lord Narayan, four-armed Lord Narayan. And the gopis walked past this Lord Narayan. Of course, they understood he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead and so on. And as we know, they paid their respects and obeisances, and their question was, have you seen Krishna? So, for the different devotees whose object, whether it's Lord Rama or Lord Krishna or Gauranga Mahaprabhu or Lord Nrisimhadev, they're not thinking in all these classified ways as we do. They simply think, this is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead and he is my object of worship. And even if they understand the feature, they simply see them as, you know, first and second and then third. They simply see another feature of the Lord as another manifestation of the Lord's greatness. Thinking in terms of original and then first and second. In either case, original. And then how we understand all these different forms is that they are all different of the same original personality of Godhead. The example given by Lord Brahma is if we have one candle and we light all the other candles, they're all the same. Candle is the candle. The original candle that lights all the other candles. But again, the example only goes so far. Because in the spiritual world, all the candles are eternal. It's not like there was Krishna, and then afterwards we had this one and that one and this one and that one. All of the expansions of the Lord are eternal. So even the examples, material examples, only go so far to explain these things. But if they understand there are other forms of the Lord, but either their devotion is so fixed on one form that they don't, in one sense, bother with the other forms or manifestations of the Lord. And if they do, then they simply see them as The Lord manifested in different ways. So there's no, you know, in a sense, there's no contradiction, certainly, for them. It doesn't take away from anything. And it shouldn't take away from us. It doesn't need to take away from our understanding either. That's one way to see it, yes. That is certainly one way to see it. And Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavad Gita. I don't remember which verse or purport. But he says a devotee of Krishna doesn't even divert their attention to other forms of Krishna. So yes, in the pure sense, yes. I don't know if you would say it's a means.
Yeah, form is like a tool or a means to attain God.
So what form? What form?
I mean any form, like in any religion you could say. Like, as you said, any form of God. I mean.
Go on, I'm not getting your point, sorry.
Yeah, I'm just asking about the form of God.
Yes.
I'd like to know more about that. So, a form like it is basically, its main objective is to allow a devotee to basically approach God.
One objective. It's not the main objective.
So, and that's because we can see that in our world there's a lot of world between different, you know, religions.
Yes.
Because they all see like God differently. So my question is, but this is just like a form, and each form it serves a purpose of concentrating on God. And there's no contradiction.
No. No. It's not either or, in other words. No, that's not what he's asking though. He's not asking that. But yes, it's not that in the material world we're also black and white. It's either or. Either this or that. And if it's not this, then it's that. And if you're not doing that, then I'm doing that. But it's much broader than that. God has different features and he's realized and worshipped in different ways. Yes. Are they really so different though? Yeah, exactly. So, please. About?
Everybody was laughing at him. when he saw his reflection in the water, he himself realized his face is just like a monk. So he was so amazed that time, and he started abusing to what I was given. So the person, he sees that the person is getting from power, he gets from this understanding of himself, that I am something. When he realizes that Narayan is everywhere,
yeah, well, that's the verse, influence of false ego. The ahankar causes us to think all sorts of strange things. Last question, yes. I don't think I said the Lord gives us the desires to worship Him in a particular way. That desire comes from the soul. That's the freedom. That's the freedom that the Lord gives the soul. The freedom of desire. Not that the Lord gives the desire to worship Him in a particular way. He gives the soul the freedom of desire to worship Him in a particular way, as a cowherd boy, gopi, or whatnot. So in that sense, he gives us the freedom of desire, but he doesn't give us the desire. Because as we have heard many times, the Lord wants the spontaneous feelings from the soul to be spontaneous, not that he plants it. So he gives us the freedom of desire. And then, depending upon our practice and our emotion and cultivation, then naturally, we will want to worship Krishna in a particular way or in a particular form. Okay, thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam.